Good morning, and welcome to the 888 Holdings Final Results 2010 conference call. For your information, today's call is being recorded. I'll now hand you over to Gigi Levy, CEO of 888. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us today in our 2010 results call. I'm joined here today, as usual, by Aviad Kobron, our Chief Financial Officer. I hope you all have the presentation with you. If you don't have it, you can still download it now from our website. In terms of the agenda, we will start with a short introduction that I will do. Then we will move to the detailed financial review. Aviad will take us through that. I will then give a brief operational reviews and regulatory review. And then after summary, we'll open it to Q&A, where we'll take your questions. If you move now to slide number three. Slide number three, which is detailed highlights. You can see the summary of this year. Essentially, we finished the year with revenues of $262 million, which are up 6% on 2009. Revenues in B2C were $222 million, up 13%. Revenues in B2B were $40 million, which are factually 21% down, but essentially 4% up on a pro forma basis. The pro forma being basically two things. The first thing is the fact that Wink, that used to be before a B2B customer, is no longer a B2B customer in 2010, and therefore the revenues out of Wink Bingo are no longer part of B2B. And the second thing are some accounting changes that I think we've explained a few times in the past, where for some of the customers, we moved for accounting from the gross to the net. This has no impact on profitability, but it does change the revenue figure. And therefore, on a like-for-like basis, revenue from B2B were 4% up. Revenue in B2C Bingo amounted to $50 million, the outcome of the Wink acquisition, up 370% compared to 2009. Revenues in emerging offering are up 12% to $16 million. And EBITDA is down 37% to $29 million. We'll, of course, talk a lot about that. But the main reasons for that are less revenues than what we budgeted for, mainly due to poker and increased marketing. We'll talk about that a little bit later. We had a very strong Q4, followed by very strong current trading, which we told the market today is 7% above the very strong Q4. Q4 was a $71 million quarter, the highest we've ever had. And Q1 currently is roughly 7% above that, also with 7% increase in number of new customer sign-ups. So overall, current trading is very strong, and we'll talk a little bit later about the reason for that and where we think we're heading. I would now like to hand it over to Aviad, who will run us through the financial section.
Thank you, Gigi. Let's go to page five, the P&L. As Gigi mentioned, the revenue was $262 million in 2010, a 6% increase. The operating expenses were 98.7. This is the clean number or the comparable number for last year, and I wanted to dwell a bit about that and explain. The $9 million increase from 2009 to 2010 is explained by about $2 million additional overhead which we acquired with Wink. A bit of that is also additional overhead which we acquired with Maytopia. We have about $3 million, which is additional of what we call white label rev share costs, and about $3 million, which are related to third-party game providers. If you actually want to look at staff costs went down 5% in Q4 last year compared to Q1, but the accumulated result of all the above resulted in $9 million increase. In terms of research and development, the absolute cost went down from $24.2 million to $21.8 million. But actually, that reflects an increase of about 100 people in terms of headcount. This is the result of the establishment of a low-cost development center in Eastern Europe, which is considerably cheaper to employ. So actually, we have more R&D and we're paying less for it. The marketing expenses increased to $91.5 million. I will give you a greater detail and explanation of the composition of that. In terms of admin, slight increase to $21.6 million. It's a combined result of more legal costs as a result of change in accounting standards. In the past, acquisition costs related to M&A were capitalized, and it's no longer possible to do this in 2010, and a bit of tax planning, but overall there isn't a significant change there. The result of all of the above, and then more importantly about the increase in marketing spend, resulted in EBITDA of $28.6 million, a decline from last year, and I will give you a bit more color about that later. Depreciation and amortization increased. Again, this is a result of the acquisitions made during the year. Net finance expense was $1.2 million. The vast majority of that is actually a notional amount. This is not a cash amount. This is actually the notional cost resulted from present valuing the Wink earnout. The clean profit before tax was $15 million. Tax remained flat on last year at $2.7 million, and the clean profit after tax, $12.4 million. Let's move to page 6. There are a few slides which I want to talk to you through revenue. This is the annual revenue from actually 2003 to 2010. And if you actually look at the historical perspective, over 7 years, we have actually fourfold increased our revenue from 59 to 262, which represents a 24% CAGR, which is an impressive result. Let's scroll to page number 7, which actually looks at the total revenue on a quarterly basis. And what I wanted to show you here is actually in black and white, Q4 was extremely strong, 18% to $71 million. You already know from the current trading that Q1 continued very strongly this year. And it's actually a good result if you're looking at the last 2 years. Let's move to page number 8, when we look at the geographical segmentation. Clearly, the result of the Wink acquisition resulted in the UK up 42%, and it now represents 49% of our revenue, and up an increase from 37% last year. And the result of that relative increase is that there's a relative decrease in the other regions, Europe down 15%, America 16%, and the rest of the world 10%. So move on to page 9. This is just the quarterly revenue of the B2C. Again, you can see there was 17% increase in the B2C revenue from Q3 to Q4 last year. And as we mentioned, that continued into Q1 2011. On the B2B slide number 10, what we attempted to do here is actually to show you the quarterly revenue of the B2B, but we've also colored in green the pro forma element which Gigi mentioned before. Part of it is the removal of Wink and the accounting change from gross basis to net basis. And you can actually see that while Q4 on an absolute basis was down on Q4 2009, it's actually flat to slightly positive on a pro forma basis. So the underlying business hasn't really declined. If you scroll to page 11, we've broken down the B2C revenue by product, and a quite interesting picture here. Number one, you can see that the casino between the two years pretty much held from $119 million to $117 million, pretty much flat. You can see the significant decline in revenue on the poker from $52 million to $38 million, and I will discuss a bit about that later on, given that there was a very strong recovery since the lows of July. And, of course, a very significant increase in bingo, given the Wink acquisition from $11 million to $50 million, and the emerging offering slight increase, but these are small numbers. If you scroll to page 12, what we wanted to show here is actually the revenue mix in the casino games. I think what one can see clearly here is that the blackjack is very stable, and there's a small migration over time from the roulette games into the higher margin video slot games, but there's nothing significant which is happening here. On page 13, you can see the casino revenue trends. And actually, this is the first glimpse. You can actually see what happened to us during 2010. You can see that we started the year with a record January on the casino. You will see a similar picture on the poker. And since February, we really saw a decline through the lows of June, the World Cup, and the beginning of July. Critically important is that the daily revenue in December 2010 was up 45% on the lows of July, which is a very strong recovery. And as I mentioned before, the recovery continued into Q1. Scroll to page 14, you will see the situation on the poker. The new poker client, which was introduced in June, actually completely changed the trend for us from the highs in January all the way to the lows during the World Cup in June. And you can see that in December 2010, daily average was 65% increase in June, and in February it's 92%. It's a complete turnaround of our poker business. Gigi will talk about it later, but I have two more slides about this. Slide 15. Slide 15 is actually an external view of how the industry, some open industry sources, measure liquidity. And we compared these two numbers to what they say about 888. And you can see that from a base, which we call it 100% in January, everybody declined, including us, until June. And from July, we have opened a very significant gap. And we think we have outperformed the market in a very significant manner. You can see on the right-hand side, 46% difference. The market is still down in February compared to January last year, about 11%, but we are up 35%. No doubt you're asking how correct this information is about 888, and I can tell you that I've dug out our internal numbers, and the correlation is almost 1-to-1. So this line is 100% correct for 888. I can't tell you about the industry, but I think it is correct. Let's go to page 16, which shows you the cost breakdown. I think if you can see, in terms of percentage terms, you can see that our total cost increased from 82% to 89%. Of course, that's the result of the result of this is the reduced margins. But if you look at the components, the main significant increase was the marketing ratio. This is the marketing ratio to the total revenue and the total marketing, from 27% in 2009. All the way up to 35%, whereas there's quite stability in the other components. If you scroll to page 17, you will see the result of all that. EBITDA was 29% with 11% margin, compared to 18%, $46 million the year before. Let's scroll to page 18. I think this is the first time you're seeing this slide. And this is really my attempt to give you, in a nutshell, an explanation of what happened to us in 2010. So it's basically an attempt. If you look on the left-hand side, we start from an EBITDA of $46 million in 2009. We end up on the right-hand side with EBITDA of 29 in 2010. How did we get from 46 to 29? Well, the first thing to look at is the green bar, which is the Wing Bingo. What we see there is basically the contribution to overheads which Wing Bingo gave us in 2010. It's $19 million. On the other hand, the big red bar, which is $21 million down, is really what poker did to us during that year. So we've suffered a significant decline in revenue until June, and whilst we have recovered very strongly, there was a lot of lost revenue and lost contribution. So basically, poker took away a bit more than everything that Wink brought in. All the other B2C products, including casino, ladies, sports, pretty much delivered the same in 2010 as it delivered the year before. Dragonfish, there's a decline of $8 million, which is explained by about half of it is the removal of the Wink, which was a B2B licensee. We mentioned before, it's about half of that. The remainder of the decline is significant investment in marketing, which we did for Caesars, for example, and small bits and pieces. The last bar is the $5 million bar, which is an increase in overheads. Predominantly, this is the increase in overheads as a result of Mytopia and Wink. And the end result is $29 million. So if I were to say in one word what happened to us during the year, If not for poker, if poker were to deliver, we would have been at very, very different EBITDA numbers. Page 19 gives you the historical perspective on our chargebacks and payment service providers costs. You will see that we have reverted to historical levels, and the chargeback levels reduced considerably from 3.7% last year to 1.1%. For those of you who recall, last year we were a target, and the industry as a whole was a target of some significant concerted fraud efforts, which I told you we have combated, and this is indeed the result. The payment service charges basically remained on the same level as last year. Page 20, you can see the customer acquisition on B2C. You can see that on casino we've actually increased the number of first-time depositors from 88,000 to 94,000. On the poker, the increase is slight from 118,000 to 120,000. A very significant increase, of course, for the bingo from 39,000 to 169,000 due to Wink. And there's also considerable success, although an absolute number small, in sport, which was surrounding the World Cup and not only. I'm going to move on to slide 21. Here you look at actually the B2C marketing. The marketing line on the face of the P&L includes the B2B marketing rev share, if you like, so it's a bit distortive. If you look at the B2C marketing itself, it went up from 56 million to 85 million. Of course, a significant part of that is in Wink. But there was also significant increased investment in marketing in the other core products, and the ratio increased from 28% to 38%. If you scroll to page 22, we're showing here the ratio of customer bonuses in casino and poker between the years. There's a slight increase from 16% to 18% in the casino and on the poker from 7 to 8. Overall, very much in control, and there's nothing much to report there. Page 23, I'm just going to gloss through it. The familiar chart, real money registrations increased 23%, reached 8.7 million in Q4, and a CAGR of 8% quarterly from Q1 2003. Let's go to the balance sheet, page 24, beginning to be a bit less boring than in the past, so I'll dwell on it for 2 seconds. I think the important thing to look on the balance sheet is actually, if you look at the cash at the end of the year, the cash was $61.5 million. If you scroll down at the current liabilities, you're going to see a number which is significantly higher than at H1, the $78 million. This is basically predominantly the Wink earnout. The most critical thing, if you read the accounts all the way around, this balance sheet is for 31st December. Since that post-balance sheet event, we have restructured the Wink. We have put an RNS, and all of you have seen that. And about $38 million out of that amount is no longer current liabilities. It actually has been deferred to May 2012. And that kind of squares the picture on that balance sheet. The last slide on my section will be the cash flow. We have generated $16.2 million net cash from operating activities, unfortunately a lot less than last year, given the results that I mentioned before. In terms of investing activity, $28 million, we have paid for the Mytopia acquisition. We have invested in CapEx about $8.5 million. And the rest and all sorts of other smaller issues. We've returned cash in the form of dividend and share buyback of $14 million, and the decrease in cash during the year was $26 million. So we started with 87.5, we ended up with 61.5. Over to you, Gigi.
Thanks, Avi. I'd now like to put a bit more operational color behind the numbers. So if you now please move to slide number 27, I think this slide tells the story of 2010. It has a pretty sad beginning and a relatively happy ending, and I'm going to run through it. What you see here is a normalized revenue slide from January 2010 all the way to December 2010. And the revenue here is also normalized per the days of the month. In other words, this is not, you know, when you look at February here, it's not February as lower revenue because of less days. It's February lower revenues because the average daily revenue was lower. So this is really a significant analysis of the strength of the business. And what you can see here, you can see that from January all the way to July, we saw a very painful and an unprecedented 25% decline in our daily revenue. Now, when I say unprecedented, the only year which had anything similar to that was 2006. 2006 was another World Cup year. And in 2006, the similar graph would have showed around close to 20% decline from January to July. In this year, we've seen 25%. And if we took out sports betting, which is not a huge piece of our revenue, if we took out sports betting or the not common sports betting trading, then the June figure, which looks here like a spike, would actually be sort of a continuation of the trend line, because in June we have a lot of sports betting customers, a lot of bets. We have around $1 million of revenues, or 1.2 if I recall correctly, in June from sports betting. But at the end of the day, that does not contribute a lot to profitability, and therefore, if we take that one out, it's basically an ongoing decline from January all the way to July. Now, the biggest question that I ask myself is, and that I'm sure you ask yourself, is what brought that decline? And there's a variety of things here. I can't tell you that I can break this down, the 25%, to very detailed, you know, this is 2.5%, this is 3%. So I'll just give you this in a qualitative form. The first thing I mentioned is World Cup, and the World Cup basically started impacting toward the end of May. So what happened before May, I don't expect it to be World Cup, because the World Cup only started in June. But June, July are definitely hit by World Cup. Then on top of it, the one thing that I think Aviad showed you before, and we'll talk about it slightly later, is the general decline in poker at the same time. I think that you could see from Aviad's slide that 888 was declining similarly to others, almost on the same trend line, from January all the way to July. In July, we managed to turn it around. I'll touch upon this in a second. But for our poker liquidity, which was not huge, that decline meant horrible things in terms of revenue. And so the general weakness in poker from January to July hit us quite heavily. And of course, as you probably understand, this is not just poker revenues, because these customers are also exposed to casino and sports betting and games, etc. And therefore, the fact that we had less customers and less activity when it comes to poker hit all of our business lines, other than bingo, where there's no really crossover between poker and bingo. So the first thing, World Cup. The second thing, from the beginning of the year, is the very negative trend of poker that we had. The third thing were a lot of technical changes. I'll detail some of these technical changes later, but while we did not have any big crashes that we can point to, we did have significant infrastructure changes, which each one of them had a lot of small problems that we had to fix, and these small problems all amounted to probably a few percent of downside. And then we also did, around February, March, we did a big rebranding, which I'll talk about in a second. Nobody can ever tell the exact outcome of a full rebranding of a B2C business, but it definitely took us some time to adjust. And when I talk about some time to adjust, I talk about the fact that when it comes to customers, when it comes to when how you market your new brand, and how you deal with the older customers that basically were used for many years to a specific look and feel, and now have a separate one, it took us some time to optimize, and I'll talk about that. The turnaround happened in July. And the reason for the turnaround, if I need to point two major things, and the first one I have not written here, but it's clearly that in August the World Cup was no longer there. So while it was August was still a summer month, it was already better in terms of activity. That's one thing. But the main thing is Poker 6. Poker 6 is an internal name of our new poker platform. I'll speak quite a bit more about this poker platform later, but it changed dramatically all the KPIs around poker. It changed the CPA, the ability to bring customers, the retention figures, everything. And that basically saved the day. And again, that brought in customers and activity, which also helped poker, casino and sports, of course. Further to that, there was better casino performance through a few new campaigns that we ran that brought very good results, and a few infrastructure pieces that we put in place that I'll describe later. There was overall stability in our systems. What I mentioned before, that we had some technical issues in half one, that did not exist in half two at all. And we currently have very strong trading, where we dropped 25%. We actually went up 37% afterwards. And not only is it 37% up, but it's actually December ended better than January. So it's a bit of a roller coaster from January to July and then from July to December. But the nice thing about it is that the current trading continues into the new year, and that does not show any similar trend in terms of decrease. We'll talk about that a bit later. I want to touch upon a little bit in this slide about the increased marketing spend, because I think that deserves some understanding. I do not think that you should expect us to continue. Well, I'm sure you should not expect us to continue spending 38% marketing as percentage of revenues. This 38% marketing was the outcome of us pushing a lot to grow revenues, to grow customer base, and basically, despite the poor revenues of half one, deciding that we continue pushing so that we create the right basis for focuses for the rest of the activities, so that we don't let the customer base go down. Now, that was a conscious decision. It also involves the fact that Bingo, in average, did slightly higher marketing spend, and now we have, with Wink, we have a higher percentage of business, which is Bingo. But at the end of the day, do not expect 888 to continue at 38%. The number that you should expect is a lot closer to 32% than 38%. And I think it's also important to say that this 38% is not that we did not spend at the beginning of the year, and then at the end of the year we said, well, we don't care, let's just spend all the money, and that's the reason for the growth. These 38% were spread quite evenly across the year, of course, with the normal focus on the winter month less than the summer month, but spread quite evenly across the year, so that essentially this is not backloading all of the marketing, so that the current trading is just because we spent all of the marketing. We did spend a nice amount in Q4, but nothing unusual. And therefore, what we see at the second half of the year is basically similar spend, more or less, but we're seeing much better returns. And these much better returns are in terms of our ability to bring in more customers at reasonable prices, and it's also at the return figure, which is the way we measure campaigns, which is the present value of the lifetime value of a customer divided by the CPA. We're seeing today, especially in poker, the best returns we've seen in four years, more or less. So right now, it's all going in the right direction. The marketing efficiency is actually going up rather than going down. And you do not need to predict us spending 38%, because that's definitely not our intention, and that's not going to be our intention in 2011 as well. Now that we cover that, let's move a little bit into what we've actually done in 2010. If you move into slide 28, I would like to say that despite the disappointing EBITDA results, 2010 was a year of significant achievements to the business. And I would like to think that these achievements in the business are contributing to the growth we're seeing in half 2, and will continue to contribute into current trading, but also to the rest of the year and the future years. The first big thing that we've done is the full rebranding of 888 B2C. Now, I'm not sure how many of you have done anything like that in the past, and I have to admit that my experience of doing something of that scale is not that extensive on the B2C business, and that's why we've taken Wolf Hollings, which is the leading brand management agency in the world. These are the guys that invented Orange and a few other things, and we've basically answered the question, and I know that many of you have seen slides along the way, so I'm not going to dwell on this a lot. We've answered the question, how do you take a bunch of scattered brands that have just a common name between them but have a totally different language, graphical language, brand language, and how do you take advantage of the fact that you're going to be marketing these different brands in one market, in one country, under different campaigns, and you still want to be able to enjoy the common trust, the common brand perception, and may, at the end of the day, reduce the CPA for each one of the brands. They came back with what you see before you, which is a structure of an umbrella brand followed by niche brands under the same 888 language. So 888.com is the umbrella brand. If you go into 888.com, you have access to all of our products. And then under it, you have 888 Casino, 888 Poker, 888 Sports, 888 Bingo, 888 Games. And this is easily expandable because if we just launched another a small proposition called 888 Plays, it fits perfectly well under the same thing. And the same thing, if we ever want to wander into financial trading, then 888 Trade or 888 Stocks or whatever is going to be sitting there as well, and so on and so on and so on. And this gives us a very good way to work in regulated markets because each one of the campaigns that you're going to do to each one of the small brands, the niche brands, is going to basically be giving the halo effect to each one of the other brands. And we're today seeing this in the UK, which is the market, of course, where we're marketing the most. We're seeing the halo effect between the brands. We're seeing that more and more people are getting to 888.com in many cases because they remember the 888 brand, the big 888 brand. And we're seeing increased efficiency in us being able to build these subset of brands, the sport one, the casino one, the poker one. And that's not a simple thing. We think that this is the right structure for the future. We think this is the right structure for regulated markets. We think this helps us a lot and will help us a lot in marketing. But not only was this a big effort, but it had two initial negative impacts, which we theoretically knew will come, but clearly we had to deal with them when they arrived. The first thing is that when you change your look and feel, your brand, and the way we changed it, we didn't just paste this new logo on the website. We changed the website completely. We changed the entire language. Brand people love using the word language to describe the graphical attributes of the way your offerings are built, the way you use words, etc. And we basically changed the entire language of all of our sites. When you do something like that, there are two things. The first thing is that this is a huge technical effort. In our case, we had to redo some 20,000 web pages. And not only have we redone these 20,000 web pages, but we've redone them already on a new content management system, which I'll mention later. Now, once this is over, there's a huge advantage because you review 20,000 web pages, you take away things that should not be there, maybe things you did not touch for many years, you make sure that everything is coherent, and you work on a new content management system, which means that you can change things very easily and very quickly. But first of all, it's a huge effort to start with. And the second thing is that once you change 20,000 pages, you're likely to have all sorts of technical issues. And these technical issues are broken links or pages that don't work well at the beginning. And we've had not that much, but we've had a bit of these as well. The second thing, this is all pretty easy to grasp. The second thing, which is a lot tougher, is what happens to the customers. Because once you rebrand, your customer suddenly is getting a new perspective of your service, which looks different. It may have the same games in it, but the entire look and feel and the entire user experience is different. And that would mean that you would need to somehow make sure that your customers don't go away. And, of course, for that, we've done a lot of user groups, and we've told all of our customers beforehand that this is going to happen, et cetera. And the second thing is that you're going to have to change your marketing a little bit because it could very well be that the way you looked before was right for customers from one media source or from one marketing channel, and now that new way may not be as relevant. So the way we looked before was a lot older, was a lot more conservative, in some cases a lot tackier. You know, if you remember the 888 Casino before, or Casino on that, the way it was before, it was more goldish and green. And basically, this new look and feel, we had to re-optimize everything to make sure that it sits well with it. The way we are today, we think that this new brand, this new look, this new structure that allows us to market 888.com as the umbrella brand, but also each one of these sub-brands, and allows us to expand it and scale it globally very easily on a new system. We think that's a great asset. We think it's a great project and one that we're very happy we did, but that was pretty painful to do. So that's the first big achievement we've done. If we move to the next slide, I'm going to touch only on a bit of the product innovation. 2010 was a year of dramatic product changes for 888, but I want to touch on just a few of the things, the ones that I think are critical. On the casino side, we've seen a lot of product innovation, but there are two things I want to mention. The first thing is something we call player account management tool. This is, to the best of our knowledge, the first time in the industry that anybody is offering the player a real transparent view of everything he's done with us, which means that we're giving the customer a real transparent view of how many bonuses he got, what are the wagering requirements on these bonuses and how much of the wagering requirements he fulfilled, what's the restrictions of on cash out, what can he cash out now, what can't he cash out now, all the history of everything he played, etc. This has been a huge project for us, a pretty difficult one, and I think that it's a great tool, very relevant for regulated markets and something that we're extremely happy with having. The second thing you can see here is a pachinko client. This is for Japan, but also for other markets. Pachinko is probably the second most popular game in the world when it comes to gambling after lottery. And we did not have any pachinko. There's not any serious pachinko in the market today. We've worked very closely with a Japanese company, and we have today what we think is the only proper or one of the best pachinko propositions out there. It's part of our casino, and we have high hopes for that, both for game for people, for Japanese people, but also for the game that we'll introduce to other markets as a new innovative thing. If we move to the next slide, you can see something else that we've done, which is new. We have moved into what we call multi-branding. This is not countering the big branding move that I've mentioned before, but it's essentially supplementing it. This is the ability to have additional brands and then cross-sell dormant customers from your main brand to other brands. We today have three more such brands. One of them is Rift Club Casino. The other one is called EuroCity. And the other one is what we call the new Casino Net. These have a different look and feel to 888 Casino, and we basically use them mostly for cross-sell between dormant customer bases. We have around 9 million registered customers, which is a pretty hefty number, and we're doing a lot of work. We're seeing very, very nice results out of that. And while we're not going to turn each one of these into a major brand that we go out and market aggressively, we do think that just like many of the Playtech licensees or the microgaming licensees we do in casino and cross-sell between the different domains, this also would allow us to get more lifetime value out of the average customer, which then in turn would allow us to spend more on CPA, grow the number of customers, and so on. So we see this as a very positive thing. This is something that before 2010 we were not experts on, and now I think we're as good as the rest of the industry. If you move to the next slide, you can see 888 Poker. I think we've spoken quite a bit about 888 Poker, the new 888 Poker in the past. I'll just say that this has been sort of an emergency project that we started around mid-2009, seeing the trend in the poker market and seeing that if we continue like that, we're not going to have a lot of poker business going forward. We invested quite dramatically in this. It was a separate team that rebuilt the entire poker with a few briefs. The first brief was that this needs to cater for the fish. This needs to cater to the casual players, the ones that are not the pros playing on eight tables and needing all the professional tools, which are very likely to end up going to Stars or Tilt. And we've built the tool, the poker, which right now we think, first of all, is one of the top products in the market. It's also been named as one of the top three products in the market by industry experts. But for beginners, for the fish, this is definitely the best product in the market from all perspectives. It's very social. It's very easy to use. It's very easy to get better in poker. And this poker is actually, this product is the savior of our poker business. And if you move to the next slide, not only is this just a very good poker product, but we've also enhanced it with some very innovative features. On the right-hand side, you can see what's called team poker, which is the ability to play in one team together with other people so that you basically have a common interest, which is a social element. But also it allows you to connect to other people around common interests. So we've already had a Man United versus Liverpool poker tournament. We've had a UK versus Spain poker tournament. And we're going to continue having these teams thing. This is never going to be the main theme in poker, but it adds another layer of socialness and fun to the game. On the left-hand side, you can see PokerCam. PokerCam is the first time in the industry that anybody allows players to play and watch each other at the same time on video. This is a great innovative product, something that I'm very excited about. We already have a pretty strong base of avid players that joined us just for that and are playing only these tables. They love these tables. These are premium tables. These are tables that don't exist anywhere else. It's a very different game because you see your opponent, but it's one that caters for a niche in the audience that was not served before. That we think is going to be a growing initiative. To the best of our understanding, others are months, if not years, away from having something like this. This is not a simple project. Having a video conference of six people in high quality at the same time on the same infrastructure as a poker table is not very simple. It took us a lot of effort, and we think this is going to be a new anchor for our poker, where people that like this video poker are not going to go anywhere else. If you go next to the next slide, this is another way to look at the poker liquidity. Aviad mentioned that before, so I'm not going to dwell too much on it. But I think the interesting thing, if you look January to January, you can see that the entire market went down 8%. That is the blue line on top. But the entire market without stars and tilts, which is probably our reference audience, because we cannot really compete with stars and tilts with our American liquidity, the entire market without stars and tilts actually went down 21%. At the same period, we went up 31%. And clearly, if you look at the July figure or the June low figure, we went down almost, we went up almost 100%, while the rest of the market stayed flat. This is really great success, and I think this is, you know, pretty critical for the way we're going to run our business forward. I'm going to talk about that a bit later. If you move to the next slide, I'm not going to dwell on that, but Bingo clearly is becoming a very significant part of our business, and that very significant part is both on the B2B part with Cascade and Costa and the many customers we have on the B2B side. And there's a few more big customers coming in that we have not told the market about. And that what we've done, and of course also on the B2C side with 888 Bingo and 888 Ladies and the Wink brand. And this is phenomenal. And if you look at what we've done this year, we've done a lot more platform improvement with basically two focuses. The first thing is to enhance the offering so that our licensees and our B2C offering is going to be more competitive in the market. In that, we've added many, many new game sections, and we've added many new offerings and games to the mix. And we've also built what's called embedded games, where you can play the side games while you're playing Bingo, which is something that customers like a lot. We've added many other features, making the platform, I'm almost certain I can say that, the best Bingo platform out there. But then on top of it, we've also added new languages and the capabilities to add new currencies. We think that Bingo right now, which is a phenomenal UK business, is definitely starting to grow in other domains. And we think this is, with our strong Bingo, both on B2C and on B2B, this is one of our biggest opportunities, and therefore we're not only investing in capabilities and features, but also in the internationalization of the Bingo. And I think you're going to see us doing quite a bit of things in Bingo outside the UK, which I think is a great thing. If you move to the next slide. The one part of the business that this is slide 35, the one part of the business that dealt really well was the Wink Bingo. You can see here a normalized graph of the Wink Bingo revenue, and you basically can see that throughout the year the business just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. The Wink Bingo business has today four brands. It's Wink Bingo, Posh Bingo, Tasty Bingo, and Red Bus Bingo. All of them are successful. All of them are growing. And I have to say, this is just a phenomenal business. This business that when we bought it had only a couple of millions of EBITDA is getting close to £10 million pound EBITDA. It's a great business. It's continuing to grow. We expect it to continue growing also through 2011. And as we today combine the teams of Wink Bingo and 888 Bingo, 888 Ladies, we think we're going to see an uplift in this entire unit compared to where we were before. And we have, as I said before, very high hopes for Bingo. If you move to the next slide, the downside of the Wink Bingo doing really well is not that it's not a bad transaction. It's not that it's a bad transaction. It's still a phenomenal transaction. And as we're basically hitting the cap, we're buying the business at a multiple of six or slightly lower than this, and I think that for regulated revenues in the UK, in their market position, this is actually a great acquisition. However, with the fact that they're getting to the upper scale of the earnout, and the fact that throughout the last 24 months, ever since we basically agreed the acquisition of the business, we have generated less cash than expected, we got to the point in which paying the amount that we need to pay in the earnout, which of course we don't yet have the final figure. Today is the final day of the earnout, but getting to the point in which we need to pay the full earnout in May created a cash problem. We then negotiated this with the Wink vendors, and we've agreed to spread the payment from now until May 2012. There are a few protections for the vendors. I think that this has been exaggerated in the market as negative protections. I think that if we went to any of the debt lenders out there, the funds that would give us debt, we would have had dramatically more restrictions than that. And being that this is a one-year arrangement, we don't think it's that critical. But just to be clear, we are giving them some security over the Wink assets. We are giving them the ability in case of a default, if we don't pay and we don't rectify this after a period of time, they may initiate a sale of the Wink business and get their share. If they go into if we go into administration or liquidity, which we don't have any plans on doing, the vendors may exercise the security, which is, of course, very trivial. There are limitations on dividends and payments out of the ordinary course of business throughout this arrangement. And there's a personal clause relating to me that this agreement was done between me and them. There's a lot of trust between us, and they just wanted to make sure that as a key person clause, I need to be on the board of the company, not necessarily the CEO, while this arrangement is there. But it's nothing unusual. There's no limitations on major corporate transactions. There's no limitations on any investment of the business or any budgeting or any marketing spend or anything like that. And I think that while clearly because it was a new vendor arrangement, we disclosed it very openly, I think it was very much overstated. If we took money today from one of the big debt funds, there would be covenants and more limitations, and there would be a variety of things that we couldn't do, which would have been probably a lot worse than this. On top of this, we have here no penalty early repayment whenever we want. We think it's a pretty comfortable arrangement, and we're quite sorry that the market took it in some cases negatively. None of the restrictions we have here we see as unique compared to any other alternative we've had in the market. If we move to slide 36, I'm not going to dwell a lot about that, but 2010 saw us finishing many of the big projects we had at hand. A new content management system, as I've said, all the websites today are on the new content management system. The meaning is that for us today to change our main website is hours rather than days. Rather than coding, today it's all working in an automated system which allows us to build content and change content whenever we want. It also allows us to present different content very well segmented to different people. This is a huge change in the business. We're enjoying this today. We've implemented a campaign management system. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with these systems, but we've implemented the Unica system, which is the best, and it's called, considered to be best in class. There's no other online gaming company, to the best of my knowledge, that has anything like that. And just to give you perspective, the meaning is that for a complex promotion, something like if it's somebody's birthday and he played more than $100 the last 2 weeks, then we want to give him a bonus like that. And if he did not play, we want to give him something like that. And please send him an SMS and also an email. Something like that used to take us weeks, if not months, of design and coding and testing. Something like that today takes us less than half a day, including the testing, because all of it is drag and drop. All of it is modeled into the system. And I think that some of the B2B partners that saw us recently and some of also I think some of the people that talk to us about corporate transactions, this is one of the things that amazed them today, and I would welcome a visit from each one of you that would like to show you how it works. It is definitely a huge capability that we have today. And there's many other tools that we've completed this year, making us, I think, a lot more scalable, giving us much shorter time to market, and a lot more flexible than we were before. If you move to slide 38, Dragonfish continued its winning in regulated markets. We've signed deals in France. We've signed the Caesars deal, and we launched it essentially in 2010. We've signed two deals in Italy. One of them is with Bwin and Gioco Digitale. The other one is with Microgame, and there's a few more deals coming in Italy. We are signing a few deals in some other regulated markets. If you recall, we signed deals in South Africa. And many of these deals, and I have to admit that the focus of Dragonfish is on regulated markets because that's the future of the industry, many of these deals have been delayed beyond what we thought. In other words, when we signed the deals in Italy, for example, The expectation was that this will be launched in Q4 2010. As we all know, we're at the end of Q1 2011. It hasn't been launched yet. But right now, at least there's a date. The South African deal, it's been delayed now for 2 years. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. The Caesars deal, clearly the big value is the U.S. Open. That's being delayed, and so on and so on. But this will remain our focus in Dragonfish. We are doing, of course, U.K. deals. We have a few dot-com deals that we'll continue doing as long as we feel comfortable with them, that they're working under the same regulatory environment that 888 B2C is working. But at the end of the day, the big focus of Dragonfish is the future and regulated markets. We think we're doing a good job in that domain, and we think you'll continue seeing that closing deals in regulated markets, and even if they're delayed a little bit, that is definitely the future of the business. If we move now to slide 39, there's also been another change in this year. This is the first year where we managed to secure a big software-only deal, meaning that it's not a managed service. If you recall, one of our competitors recently, in acquiring some of their affiliates, said that what they want to become is a full white label partner rather than just a software provider. Now, we have always been a full white label partner, and it took us some time to change our software so that we can become a standalone software provider, which now we are as well. And the micro gaming, the micro game, but also the Bwin Gioco Digitale deals are deals of software only, which are they're smaller in scope, but of course much higher in margin. And this is something we're very happy to have the capability. And what we have today, the reason why we call it Casino Flex, or the flexibility, is because what we can do today is basically present you with a menu of services, everything from just software all the way to a full white label, and let you pick and choose whatever you want us to do. There will continue to be customers where we do everything. There will continue to be customers where we provide only software, and we think that this flexibility is critical for the business going forward. If you move into the next slide, slide number 40, we think that that's a great example of how that flexibility works. Not that this is a huge deal. This is going to be a few millions a year, but we've now launched the Second Life, or Linden Labs, a payments project. That's not a gambling company at all, but they're taking from us payment services, and these payment services essentially are taking advantage of all of our fraud and anti-money laundering and payment processing capabilities to provide an online merchant with a service. This is a lot about our scalability, our ability to provide good prices, our ability to provide good service, and while in 2010 we did not focus on getting additional deals like that, after launching Second Life, there are a few interested parties that already talked to us about providing such services, and this could slowly but surely grow to be another stream of revenues for the company. If we move now to slide 41, the Mytopia acquisition is performing slightly less than what we would like it to be in terms of revenues right now, but the revenues are growing. Bingo Island is the most popular bingo application on Facebook, and the revenues out of it, the run rate is getting close to $3 million and growing on an annual basis. We have signed the deals to build The Weeds and Dexter, the two popular TV shows, social games. Weeds will be launched mid-year. Dexter will be launched closer to the end of the year. This comes with a huge marketing commitment from the actual studios that own them, and we think that that has a very, very high potential. We have more than 1 million monthly active mobile poker players on Android today, and we're launching the iPhone application very soon. This now is having micropayments introduced into it, and we think that this will also become a new revenue source for Mytopia. As I said before, it's growing, but it's still not profitable. We would expect that by the end of the year, the run rate would be of a profitable company. Clearly, the recent transactions in this field are all around multiples of 10 times on revenues or 7 times on revenues, and we feel pretty confident that we're going to continue growing this business into a business that will be very valuable for the 888 group. On top of this, we've done the first trials of being able to convert customers from Facebook into the real money gambling area. This is with the permission of Facebook in the UK, and Facebook will allow this anywhere else in the world where gaming is regulated. This is something that we've worked with them, and this is something that's very interesting. And at the end of the day, we're starting to see very encouraging numbers in terms of being able to acquire customers relatively cheaply in the Facebook environment and then choosing them carefully and converting them to a real money environment. And we think that this very well could be one of the future customer acquisition sources for the industry, and we think we have a bit of a head start with us owning Mytopia. If you move to the next slide, slide 41, you can see the regulatory framework. I'm not going to bore you with all the details, given that I know you've seen similar slides or even much more detailed slides in the presentation of many of our peers. I'll just give you our perspective. The overall, the trends are positive. We still think that, just like in the UK, as online gaming is around 20% of total gaming, we think that we're going to see with time a similar percentage or even higher across the world. The meaning, of course, is that the online gaming market should grow from roughly $26 billion where it is today to around $100 billion, given that the entire gaming market globally is $500 to $600 billion. And we think that regulation is the way forward. And when you look at the market, I think that at the end of the day, while some of them are not that easy, all of them are going to be aligned at the end of the day. Italy, finally, casino and cash games decree published, and we have a launch date. France, right now, it's pretty miserable for everybody because of the restrictions on customer registration and because of the high taxes. There's a follow-on committee that's set up with a Q4 summary of their work, and we would very much hope that for the sake of their tax money and for the activity of operators in the market, there would be some changes in tax and the introduction of more games, which, of course, will be very positive for us. The Germany attempt to talk about only sports betting is getting some negative feedback from some of the Landes and some positive from some of the others. We're not sure where this is going, but at the end of the day, we welcome every regulation. Spain, Greece, Denmark, all of these are positive trends, some of them more delayed than others, but all of them are talking about a regime that we feel pretty confident about. Denmark, the initial regime that was suggested was good. The plans are currently stalled, but there's going to be more clarity in Q3. Belgium is one of those we don't like because right now, if they don't change anything, it's going to be online licenses, it's extensions to offline licenses. We are in negotiations with a few companies where we may enjoy that somewhat on the B2B front. Specifically in B2C, we hardly have any revenues from Belgium, so there's no negative impact there, but there's definitely no positive if we can't get a license on the ground. Netherlands, intention to regulate in 2012, which seems to be all going in the right direction. And in the United States, while we're not necessarily the expert on what's happening, from what we hear from our partners and from other companies we're talking to and from some of the regulators, it's likely to move on forward on a state-by-state basis rather than the federal basis. And I think everybody's sort of sure that by the end of 2011, there's going to be at least one state where online gaming is going to be legitimized. We are investing a lot in technology and business preparation. It's not that trivial to move into that regulatory framework. I think you may look at some of our peer companies, and you can see some very big companies that have not yet made a single move into regulated territories, which is clearly not our case. This costs a lot of money, but this is the way we look at the future, and we're very happy to say that the way it looks, each one of these projects, once you complete them, it's actually becoming easier to do the next one. So we're pretty hopeful that by the time we finish 2011 with a few more regulated markets, it's going to be less of a painful process to start doing additional ones. The green paper of the EU, we've got to mention that. While this is still, it will take comments, etc., I think it reaffirms what we know by now, which is that the new stand is that local regulation is the way forward, and that each one of the member states is going to end up with a local set of regulations. Hopefully, they're not going to be restrictive. Hopefully, they're going to allow companies like us, like Party Gaming, Bwin, and others, to build profitable, solid businesses in each one of these markets. But I think that if in the past there were people that were not still sure whether there's some validity to an ongoing dot-com model, I think that's pretty clear that right now the entire direction is for local regulation. Last but not least, I think it is very important to say that in our case, other than the UK, which is roughly 50% of our business today, we're very proud of that. There's no other market which is more than 6% of our business, and the majority of them are below that. That actually means that from our perspective, each one of these regulatory changes is an opportunity. It means that if the biggest market that we have goes down, it's only 6% down. And on the other hand, any market which regulates and allows us to enter it more aggressively, there's an upside. So from that perspective, while it is challenging, while we think the coming few years are going to be pretty volatile in terms of the regulatory framework, We do think that it is a big opportunity for us, and we do think that this is something that, as one of the companies that are pursuing regulated online gaming, that this is something that we can enjoy a lot based on our B2C capabilities, but also our B2B capabilities. If we move to the next slide, slide 43, we've spoken a lot about the Nevada Gaming Control Board and the Nevada Gaming Commission approval. This is the first. It's the first time any regulator in the United States approves an online gaming company, and definitely the Nevada regulator, which is considered to be the toughest regulator in the United States and probably one of the toughest in the world. The approval is for our suitability to work with a Nevada licensee, and essentially it's the equivalent, if you wish, to us to the background checks and company checks that anybody would do on us for any licensing process. Now, clearly this is not licensing because there's not a license for online gaming in Nevada right now, but there's going to be one soon. And I think that this puts us in a great position vis-a-vis Nevada for any licensing that's going to come there, vis-a-vis any Nevada licensee that knows that any company they're going to have to work with is going to have to pass the same scrutiny. The summary of the Nevada Gaming Board was this is not a blanket approval. This is something that every company will have to undertake. It took us more than a year to get through that. I think we did also a lot of the education of the Nevada regulator about online gaming. But we're very proud of that. We're very proud of the very warm words that the Gaming Control Board and the Gaming Commission said about us, about how well-regulated we are, about how strong our self-regulation is, about how strong our responsible gaming practices are and anti-money laundering practices. And I think that this puts us in a very good position vis-a-vis the United States once this becomes relevant, puts us in a very good position in B2B vis-a-vis U.S. customers, but also indicates that we probably have the ability to get licensed anywhere in the world if we manage to pass the Nevada Gaming Control Board. So we're extremely, while this does not have any immediate monetary impact, to be frank, that does not mean any dollar more of revenues tomorrow. I think that longer term, this is a great achievement for us, for the industry, and it's going to help us a lot in the future. If you move to the next slide, that is somewhat of the big elephant in the room. Not calling Ladbrokes an elephant, of course, but I'm sure you have questions about Ladbrokes. And sadly, what I can tell you right now is that there is still ongoing discussion. There is still interest on both sides. There are, of course, some gaps when it comes to price. Otherwise, it would have already been closed. And I think it's fair to say that it will be determined either way in the very near future. For us as a business, it's not necessarily a very good thing to continue having this hanging. I'm sure that for Ladbrokes internally, with their people thinking about what's going to happen if there's going to be such a merger, it's not necessarily very good. And therefore, we all have a very sincere interest to get this done either way pretty quickly. So I hope that in the coming few weeks, there's going to be some more clarity on that. Sadly, I don't have that clarity today. If you move to the next slide, slide number 45, current trading is very strong. Q1 2011 to date is about 7% above the very strong Q4 2010, which makes it 10% above Q1 2010, which was a strong quarter despite the subsequent fall. The meaning is that if Q4 was $71 million, a record quarter for us, if you recall, then Q1 is going to be a new record quarter at around $76 million, which is, of course, great in terms of results, something we're very proud of. And the trend, which is critical, is not similar to the trend we've seen last year. So if you look at January, February, March, rather than seeing the decline, the average daily decline between January to February and then in March, we're actually seeing strength in the business, so that February and March are actually better each one than the month before. And that is like the best years we've had, like the best years we've had in the past, and unlike 2010. This is fueled very much by poker, very strong performance and good performance across the entire business. Just to give you a perspective, if you look at the daily average revenue in March compared to July in poker, it's roughly 86% up, which is a great figure. If you look at the average casino revenue, it's more than 50% up in the same period. So we're seeing very strong trading across the entire business. And not only is it current trading, but it's also the new customer signups. So we're seeing today 7% new customer signups more than what was a very strong customer signups quarter Q4. And that indicates in our world a very positive momentum which makes us think that we're going to pass through the summer a lot better than last year. So in that perspective, the current trading is very strong. We're very confident in the business, and with everything happening, remember, we entered 2010 with good current trading in January, but in a very negative poker trend. We're entering 2011 on very strong trading, but also the strong trading is continuing from January to February and March, and it's also in a very positive poker trend. So that puts us in a totally different perspective. If you move to the next slide, I think as a summary, we can say the following. It was a tough half one 2010. We have had a very, very tough time. We've had many problems. We've had many issues. We've ran around trying to find out what's wrong and changing it. We made a decision, a conscious decision, not to cut investment despite the challenging trading. I mean, clearly, we could always cut some 300 people and get EBITDA back to where it was supposed to be. It was our decision, rightfully or wrongfully, that this is something that we didn't need to do because we're still betting on the future. The major half one problems we feel are all resolved. The poker is resolved, the casino is resolved. Everything is actually working a lot better today. There's improvement throughout half two with poker reinvented, but also strong performance across the business with a very, very strong start to the year. We're way above our budget. And we basically think that we've had a hiccup in 2010, one that's slightly explainable by World Cup, a lot explainable by poker decline, and explainable by a variety of other things. We think that we're now very much back on track. And if you look back at the quarterly revenue figures, you can see that the company that basically grew quarter on quarter from the for ever since closing the United States, other than a few quarters in the middle, which were bad quarters, where we had to fix the business, I think that the overall trend of continued growth is the trend you're going to continue seeing in this business. This is where we're aiming, and this is the focus of the business. We still think that the regulatory changes are the major risk. Clearly, this is where tax or anything else can damage us. But we also think this is the big opportunity. With this year, we expect margins to be slightly better. We expect the infrastructure that we've built to allow us to increase margins further in the future. And we think that with this new strength in the business and this big growth trend, we actually have the ability to take a lot of advantage of these new regulatory frameworks. So it's a challenge. But with B2B and B2C, with our capabilities, with our assets, I think we're also in a very good position to take advantage of this opportunity. Thank you very much for bearing with me. I'll now hand it back to the operator to take questions.
Thank you, sir. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll now pause for just a moment to assemble the queue. And we'll now move to our first question today, which comes from Vaughan Lewis from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Just going back to slide 18, you've got the sort of drag from poker as 21 million. Looking at the revenue drop of about 13 million, what are all the extra costs? Is that the development of the new product, or was that additional marketing, or what is that gap between 13 and the 21? Looking at your second one is looking at your geographic split. Europe was quite weak, as you said, dropped 15% or so. How much of that is explained by closing France, and which other sort of European countries did you see reasonable declines in? The third one is on Italy. What actually are the plans here in terms of what brand are you going to push, and how much marketing spend you're planning to put into the business this year? So will it make money this year, or is it next year or the year after? And then finally, you said the marketing percentage should drop to a sort of normalized level of 32%. Is that a long-term target? What sort of level are you looking at for 2011?
Okay. Aviad, do you want to take the first one about the poker number?
Yes, I will. Van, first of all, well spotted. The difference between the charts is that the first one actually shows only the revenue decline. But the one which you've asked on, which is slide 18, actually deals with contribution to overhead, which is actually the revenue less the marketing. So there wasn't only revenue decrease, there was also slightly marketing increase, and the net result is 21, not 14.
Okay.
Gigi, the other questions?
Sure. So, does that answer the question on the 21?
Yeah, so you've lost 13 million in revenues and you've spent 8 more on marketing as well as that, is what you're
that's
saying.
That's roughly correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's more or less correct. There's a bit more there about the variety of other things that happen in poker in terms of chargebacks, et cetera. But overall, the majority of it is less revenues and more marketing costs.
Okay.
Okay, in terms of the lost European revenues, the majority of this is France and Italy. We've actually seen the majority of the other jurisdictions perform, not phenomenally well, but perform okay. Now, clearly, France and Italy have been very painful, closing the dot-com business. In terms of plans going forward, I'm not sure I understand the question about the brand. Just to be very clear, excuse me, the company has one major brand, which is the 888.com brand and its subset brand. And this is the brand that we're taking around the world. There are two exceptions to that. The one exception is that on the casino audience, we're going to use additional brands, not as front runners, but as brands where once a customer drops out of the 888 casino, we can use these other brands to basically offer that customer something else. This is a common practice in the industry. Most of the Playtech or micro gaming licensees would have close to 10 brands, as you probably know. And we did not use that practice in any material manner up till 2010. We started doing it in 2010. We've perfected it, and now this is a basic part of our business. Once we can't get a customer back into 888 Casino, we'll use these other brands to offer him something different. Each one of these other brands have a different taste to them, if you want. And until we manage to get from this customer more and more revenues, hopefully, meaning that the customer doesn't go elsewhere, but he can actually get the alternative from us. That's on the casino side. You don't have the same thing on poker. You don't have the same thing in sports betting. The other exception is in bingo in the UK. Bingo in the UK today is very much a multi-brand environment. I think that other than Gala Bingo, there isn't a single big bingo site that does not operate a multitude of brands. Clearly, Cascade operates a multitude of brands, and most of the others operate a multitude of brands. And this is just because this has become a market where you mostly, I don't think it's growing that much per se, you're mostly stealing market share from others. To do that, you need to constantly come up with innovative stuff, with new messages, with new promotions that are different, and it's difficult to do all of that under one brand. So when it comes to the UK, I think the UK bingo, I think you'll see us using 5 or 6 brands and basically switching between them our marketing costs. This is something that, I have to admit, we did not know how to do in the bingo world before we acquired Wink. They're extremely useful and very efficient at doing that. And this is something that they'll continue doing, optimizing marketing spend and optimizing revenue from customers. But as a strategy, very simple. All of the focus globally is on 888. In the UK, we have additional bingo brands. And maybe if other bingo markets would evolve to be similar to the UK, but of course we're years away from that, we'll also have multiple brands in bingo in other markets. And in casino, dormant customers, we will use other brands to try and get the most out of these dormant customers. But the main strategy, the main marketing spend is all around the 888 brand. Does that answer the question?
But it was more specifically on Italy. I'm a bit confused about this agreement with Endemol then. That is an 888. .it brand then, and what exactly is the partnership for then, and will that make money this year or next year?
We don't expect this partnership to be very profitable this year, because at the end of the day we still don't even know when it's going to be launched because of the casino decree being delayed, and now we're the approval processes of the approval processes of our answer to that decree, and so that's going to take time. So I don't think it's going to be extremely profitable this year. Probably we'll talk about next year. But the major thing here is that what we're doing there, we're building a bit of a different strategy with them, because they're our partner. And there, the main gambling domain is going to be 888.it with the subset brand and everything. However, around it, we're going to use the subset brands that they have, Deal or No Deal, Big Brother, etc., to drive traffic to this site and to drive traffic to this proposition. So there's not going to be a Big Brother casino per se. In other words, we're not going to hide the 888 and just use Big Brother. We don't think that the brand caters for this. But on 888.it, there's going to be exclusive Big Brother content, exclusive Big Brother games. There's going to be games that are going to lead you to get free tickets to visit the Big Brother house. There's going to be a tournament that's going to lead you to basically be able to get into Big Brother house. Similarly, Deal or No Deal, there's going to be exclusive Deal or No Deal content. As you know, Deal or No Deal content was one of the building blocks of Jackpot Joy in the UK. So in Italy, this is exclusive to us. There's going to be mentioning of the game on the television. There's going to be an exclusive game on our site. There's going to be exclusive ways to get into the TV show through the site, et cetera, et cetera. So we're creating essentially a entertainment-related online gaming brand, but the online gaming brand is going to be 888.
Okay. And then the last one was just on the marketing percentage this year, if that's right.
As I said before, I think that looking at a figure of above 30%, but closer to a 32 rather than a 38, is probably a good approximation.
That's for 2011.
I'm sorry, that's for 2011, yes, and future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We now move to our next question from Simon Davies from Colin Stewart. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. A few questions, if I may. Firstly, you talked about rising cost of technical and business preparation investment given forthcoming regulatory changes. Can you perhaps quantify what impact that might have in the current year? And secondly, in terms of Caesars, can you just talk a bit more about the scope of that partnership? Will it specifically cover Caesars operations or licenses in U.S. states where it chooses to pursue those as and when they come up? Will it prevent you from signing licenses with any other U.S. casino operators? And finally, just to confirm, you're saying that Wink generated around 50% of group EBITDA in 2010?
Well, let's start with the third one. The answer is yes, it's close to 50%. Now, I know that it's a statement to say, it sounds a big statement, but what it actually means is that where we suffered on poker and where we suffered on other things, it basically did not impact the Wink business. So the Wink business was a good business, and the rest of the business was being very challenged. So the answer is yes. Having said that, of course, do remember that there were around $6-7 million of EBITDA that should have been on the B2B side, should have been in our numbers if Wink remained an external company. So that on that, does that answer that question?
Yes, thanks.
Okay. In terms of the rising costs of technical infrastructure, yes, there are rising costs. Yes, we have invested, I think, a big chunk of it. I think that, you know, the biggest cost we've had so far is Italy. We're talking about probably a few millions that we've invested in this. But the majority of this is just the work that we're doing in-house. In other words, rather than increasing costs, this is about prioritizing projects. So the downside, of course, is that while we had, you know, 150 people dealing with the Italian project of all of its aspects, some of which are not just unique for Italy, as I said, are infrastructure that will be relevant for other markets. Some of them are basically part of the B2B deals we've signed in Italy, and they're not unique to Italy as well. But if we just round it and say that there were 100 people that are dealing with the Italian project, the price is not the cost of these 100 people, although, of course, we could theoretically let them go, but it's the alternative cost of what the opportunity cost of what these people could have done. So theoretically, these people could have, you know, built a new casino software which would have made us more money. Or maybe we could have done, rather than just doing the new poker platform, we could have done a new something else platform and make more money. We don't expect to see costs increasing for the next market. We just expect to see a price in terms of other developments, because we're going to use the team that we have on these regulatory environments. As it seems right now, the big work that we've done in Italy covers a significant part of the requirements that we're seeing in other regulations. I'm sure there's going to be surprises. I'm sure that every regulator is going to put in things that we did not do yet. But at the time being, I think it's fair to say that it does not seem like like an open pit that can go on forever. It seems as if it's pretty much under control now. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, so you're saying we shouldn't expect a particular step up in R&D and operating expenditure in the current year?
Definitely not.
Thanks.
And the third thing about Caesars, I have to be pretty delicate because we're under quite significant NDAs here in our relationship with Caesars, but I'll say a few things. The first thing I can say that there is only one operator that we have some exclusivity on, in terms that there's only one operator that we're restricted from working on based on our relationship with Caesars. And I can also tell you, without naming that operator, is that the chances of this operator working with us when we work with Caesars are almost zero anyhow. So in terms of exclusivity, no, there's no exclusivity that bothers us. In terms of what's the relationship for, again, this is all pretty sensitive because it's not our prerogative to disclose it, but I can assure you that we would not have pursued the very long, painful, and costly Nevada process if this was only for working in the UK. WSOP in the UK is a small, nice business that we enjoy doing, but it's not the upside that we're in this for. We're in this for the future upside of the United States, and while I can't disclose exactly what are the terms of the agreement, this is why we're putting in all of the efforts.
Right, thanks.
Thank you. We're now to our next question from Ed Birkin from Barclays Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, morning, Gigi. I just wanted to couple of questions. First of all, you talked about return on marketing and your best return in 4 years, especially in poker. Can you just go into a bit more detail, because the way I've got it, your revenue per active players has actually decreased markedly, and in Q4 2010 it's one of the lowest you've ever had for poker, and your cost per acquisition has increased.
Yeah. Do you want to run all through them or one by one?
Oh, well, just generally, I don't understand how your general yield per player has decreased and your cost per acquisition has increased, yet you're getting a better return.
Well, first of all, you're not seeing the cost per acquisition for a poker customer. That's one thing. Second thing, the yields that you're seeing are yields on active, but it could be that these customers are playing longer, so the lifetime value is higher altogether. And the third thing, this is just very factual. The number of new customers that we're getting in poker today are the highest numbers we've ever got of new customers. These numbers of high customers are without spending crazy amounts of money, and overall the returns of these campaigns are better than we've seen for the last few years. I mean, if you want to, to send you some summaries of sample campaigns, we'll be happy to share this with you, but this is just a fact.
So you're saying the return in number of customers per amount spent or their yield?
No, I'm talking, the way we measure return is the projected lifetime value of a customer based on a model that we later on, of course, confirm with the actual cash flows out of the customers, the present value of that cash flow divided by the CPA of the customer. The CPAs we're seeing in poker are lower. We're bringing in a lot of customers. And while it seems that the ARPU has gone down in average, which it has because we're bringing in different types of customers, these are customers that stay with us for a long time, and the lifetime value, the present value of that, is expected to be not dramatically different than the lifetime value that we've had before. Does that answer the question? I mean, I don't know.
So you've increased your lifetime value expectations? Your kind of length? Okay. Get that. Okay. Fine. And then secondly, can you just clarify, are you paying 15% gross profit tax on the Wink Bingo, or is that taxed offshore?
We're paying, sorry?
Are you paying UK taxation on the Wink Bingo, or is that taxed offshore as well?
No, we're not paying any tax on the business. The business has not paid tax before, and we're not paying tax today.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. We now move to our next question from Michael Campbell from Daniel Stewart. Please go ahead.
Hi there, gents. Just three questions from me, please. Firstly, current trading, you've got average daily revenues about 7% ahead. Could you give us a flavour for the breakdown across the product categories? Secondly, could you just remind us what the earn-out multiple is for Mytopia? And finally, are you in any talks with the US Department of Justice at all? Thanks.
Okay. Let's start with the last one, which is the shortest one. The answer on that is that we don't have anything to report on DOJ. In other words, there's nothing significant that we can tell you about the DOJ at this point.
Okay.
That's on that. In terms of the current trading, it is predominantly B2C more than B2B. In other words, B2B is on target, but B2C is excelling at this point. And in B2B, it's actually strong on all of them, meaning casino, poker, and bingo. Actually, even sports, which is smaller. But specifically, poker is the strongest of them. So that's on that one. But none of them is declining. All of them are up on Q4.
Okay.
And in terms of the earnout on Mitopia, Mitopia had two stages of earnout. We paid $12 million on Mitopia initially as down payment. Then there was another $6 million that we just recently paid, which were based on a variety of parameters, such as new customers, new mobile customers, signing the Weeds and Baxter contracts, etc. And they've met all of these milestones, so we paid another $6 million. That's $18 million altogether.
Yep.
The next stage of the Mitopia earnout is only kicks in if Mitopia makes more than $2.5 million profit in 2012. As it seems now, it's when it does kick in, it is a multiple of 3 on the actual EBITDA. In other words, the way it looks now, we would be very, we'd be happy, but we'd be very surprised if it meets any earnout milestone.
Right, sorry, is that $2.5 million on 2012 or 2011?
No, apologies, 2011. Sorry for not being clear.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We now move to our next question now from Nick Batram from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Morning, chaps. Just got a few questions here. First of all, I noticed that the capitalized development cost of internally generated assets was $1 million higher. What sort of level do you expect going forward? Secondly, is without any change to regulation in France, I mean, how long are you going to persist? It must be costing a lot of money, and you've clearly not got much market share. Also, what's plan B if Ladbrokes don't come through? I mean, Gigi, you've spoken a lot about the need for sort of consolidation in the industry, and clearly regulated markets are going to cost an awful lot of investment, and your balance sheet clearly doesn't look in a good state to actually to deliver that. And finally, I was just trying to square a comment in slide 36 where you say there are no limitations on major corporate transactions, yet I'm sure in the Wink Bingo announcement it said that no material acquisitions or disposals could be undertaken without the say-so of the Wink vendors.
Okay. So as it becomes customary, I'll start with the last question. The no limitations on major corporate transactions, the meaning of that was that we don't need to get any approval for any corporate transaction if following the transaction the debt is going to be settled. What I tried to portray there is that if tomorrow, say, we close a deal with Ladbrokes or somebody else, and that deal includes immediately paying the rest of the debt, we don't need to get their approval. We can simply do that.
Right. But you
clearly
can't buy,
just like in any other lender, we cannot now go take cash while we don't pay them. We cannot go and take cash and spend it on another acquisition as long as we don't pay them.
Sure.
So from that perspective, you're right. There are limitations on cash acquisition, not on cash spending. We can run the business as we see fit. There are limitations on cash acquisition. However, there's no limitations on any of the major corporate transactions. Does that clarify the difference?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Okay. Capitalization, we expect this to be maximum same level, probably lower. What we had a lot in 2010 was a lot of this work on all of these infrastructure projects, as well as the major work on Italy, which we call the regulatory platform, which is essentially a very flexible platform that we think will allow us to more easily comply with regulation in other markets as well. A small part of that was capitalized. And we feel that we're not going to see definitely anything higher than that in the coming years, and probably lower than that. Okay on that one?
Yep.
The France question is a tough one because we clearly debate this day in, day out. I'm happy to tell you that France is costing us right now tens of thousands of dollars a month only. So it's definitely not very painful. But the other side of it, of course, is that we're not making any money there. We're basically living off the churned old customers doing a lot of CRM marketing to dormant databases that we have, and not a lot more than that. This is not an optimal situation. It still is sitting there with no use. But it's our decision right now that's the direction we've taken, that we're minimizing costs until the end of the year and waiting to see whether they're going to open Casino as well. If they open Casino as well, we think there is a significant business we can build there. And I think that in Casino we can build this business almost under any terms, because at the end of the day you can play with payout ratios, etc. It's not like poker where you can't increase prices as you see fit. And we think that if Casino is going to open, or if poker taxation is going to change, you're going to see us more active. If they decide openly that they're not going to change anything for a few years, then we may end up pulling out. But as I said before, the current impact is almost insignificant. Okay?
Yeah, have you got any feeling for where you think the French regulators might go?
You don't want to hear my view of the French regulation at this point. At least not on a public call. In terms of Ladbrokes, first of all, I have to say that, I've said before, and I'm not changing my mind, I think that entering this position, this period of regulatory changes and regulatory volatility, it's better to be bigger. It's better to enter it with more EBITDA cushion. It's better to enter it with more power. This is a given. I think that I feel more confident at this point that after we turn the business around from the downside of half one, I feel a lot more confident that if required, we can do it on our own. I mean, our numbers are very strong. We see a very positive trend. We see a very positive trend on B2B sign-ups. All of it is going in the right direction, and the strategy seems to be, again, I'm being very careful. Until we finish 2011, I'm going to be very careful in what I say about numbers. But it seems as if the strategy of having the dual head B2B and B2C geared toward regulated markets could be the right solution for us and could be actually enabling us to work the right way. And so I feel pretty confident that the company can get along on its own. Having said that, it's not Ladbrokes. There's still quite a few other interested parties out there, Americans, European, while we're not... as long as we're talking to Ladbrokes, we're not really entertaining any other offers. I'm quite sure that if we call this off, there's going to be other interested parties. Can we get to an agreeable price? Maybe. I'm not sure, but it's definitely not a must. It doesn't look like a must at this point. And it will all depend on what's the asking price of the major shareholders of the company and what others are willing to offer.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question now from Ruhi Siddiqui from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, guys. I have a couple of questions, if I may. On your Poker 6 platform, could you just talk a little bit more about the benefits of having this versus, what the competition is doing? There doesn't seem to be a material difference in liquidity. So what exactly is it that's getting these customers on? And then, as we move into the, let's say, Q4 this year, are we going to just sort of see a stabilization, or would you still expect to see growth coming through in customer numbers? And then the other question I have is also in Book 6, and just how much have you spent on developing this platform? So if you were to put a figure for, staff, technology, everything else that you've had to do, what would that be?
Okay. I'm going to change my the method. I'm going to start with question number two. In terms of Q4 this year, what we would like to see, a much better Q2 and Q3 compared, of course, to last year. In other words, we would expect that, like in a normal year, the Q2 would be slightly below Q1, and Q3 would be slightly below Q2 rather than the significant dips that we've seen last year. And this is more like the trends that we've seen in past years, and these are the trends that we think we should expect this year. And then we would see Q4 grow from that basis of Q3. In all of our normal years in the past, Q4 was higher than Q1. This is definitely our intention as well this year. So that's in terms of Q4. In terms of Poker 6, I think that Poker 6, and you know, I'll be happy to run you through it afterwards with, you know, with more detail. But Poker 6 is a very good poker software. It is a lot better than what we had before, and you know, part of it is not about being necessarily a lot better than others, because we were always a very good marketing company, and it's just that some of our, you know, some of the features of our product were not very good. This new product is as good as anything else in the market. It's a lot easier to play. It's a lot more fun to play. And it's a lot more geared towards the casual players. I'll give you a few examples. When you enter the lobby of something like PokerStars, it's a pretty scary experience the first few times. There are hundreds of tables, if not thousands of tables. Everything is very, very aggressive. Finding your right table, finding your right limits is not very easy. We've put in something called the beginner's lobby. That beginner's lobby basically recommends for you a table. Finds you a table, recommends that table for you based on a variety of algorithms that we've developed. I'll give you another example. All of the poker software out there, including ourselves in the past, have allowed players to basically write notes about other players. So if I play with you and I think that you're a shark, you're a very good player, I can basically write, played with her yesterday and the game was like this and like that and very aggressive and so on. But many of the beginners don't actually use that, because this is not a very trivial thing to do while you're playing. What we now allow people is to basically take an icon. These icons are animals, and basically tag the player with an icon, so that if I think you're a shark, I'm going to paste the shark at you, and every time I'm going to run into you in any table, I'm going to see that I've tagged you as a shark. If I think that somebody else is a chicken or a fish or a donkey and a variety of things which are common terms in poker, you can use that and basically tag players. Now, this is the same meaning as writing the notes, but it's just a lot easier and a lot faster and a lot simpler for the beginners. All of that, including the video that we've put in, including the team poker, are all things that are very much, very different than any other poker software out there, and they're all very geared toward people that are more casual than professional players. Now, if you want to look at it, at one extreme, there's Zynga on Facebook. At the other extreme, there's Full Tilt, the most professional poker site out there. We want to be in the middle. We want to be a lot closer to Zynga in that regard than the other poker operators out there, because we figure we can't compete with PokerStars and Full Tilt on the hardcore poker environment. And once we've launched that and we've launched our campaigns around it, we actually saw, you know, it's a bit of a rolling on story, because once we launched that, we launched the campaign. That campaign was very successful. The retention of the customer was very good, which meant that we now suddenly had more liquidity, which meant that the next campaign was more useful because the customers also had more liquidity and so on. And the liquidity actually, as I said before, more than doubled from the lows of July. So in that regard, not only is the product good, but also the product plus the marketing plus the retention of players and more than doubled the liquidity. So in that regard, right now, the entire ecosystem is a lot better. If I point you into Poker Scout, which is the site that takes away the data from the poker site, then I'm extremely happy to say that we recently passed two of the big competitors that we've never been bigger than. One of them is GTEC, or what's called International Poker. The other one is Microgaming. We're now bigger than both of them, and we are now flat, exactly the same as Entraction, which used to be the wonder child of the poker world up till recently when their model started collapsing, I think. And we're now as big as them. We expect to pass them in the coming few days, and we actually expect to see liquidity continuing to grow in the coming few months. So that's on Poker 6. In terms of the cost of Poker 6, we don't usually give out such breakdowns and think that it's 99% expense rather than capitalized. It's more difficult to actually quantify the projects exactly because it's been a multitude of projects. But I think that if you look and say that we're talking about something above $5 million and less than $10 million, that would be a good approximation. We built it like a startup. We took a team of people. We put them on the sidelines, and we told them, you're like a startup within the company. Please go and build the best poker platform you can build. We're not going to bother you. That's a way to spark innovation in a bigger company, and that works phenomenally well, and actually it's a much lower cost than we initially expected.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you, and now move to our next question from Jason Streets from RBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, or good afternoon. two questions. Firstly, when you were talking about these new poker players having greater longevity, how do you know that if you've only just acquired them?
Okay, that's the only question?
Well, my second question was going to be, if you are acquired by Ladbrokes, does the Nevada Gaming Board have to go through a whole extra process of approval?
Okay. Let's start with the second one. On the Nevada Gaming Board, the answer is that theoretically any change of ownership would require further review of the new owners. Having said that, I think that the process that we've undergone has been more or less threefold. It's been our shareholders, our history, and our practices. Now, I think that, first of all, the history and the practices would not have to be reviewed. As you can imagine, a big chunk of the investigation was around what did we do in the United States in the past, how did we act, what sort of legal reviews did we base ourselves on, etc. So in terms of history and process, which are big parts of it, we're not going to have to redo that. In terms of shareholders, yes, we will need to do that again. But if the new acquirer is going to be a publicly traded company with no history of trading in the United States, I can't see how that's going to be any significant process. Does that answer the question?
Well, it does. I mean, you don't think they'd be bothered that Ladbrokes lost its casino license here in the UK, admittedly several decades ago, but would that be...
No, I don't think so. And actually, we've had a few discussions with them about Ladbrokes along the way because they wanted to know what that means and they wanted some background. They did not want to approve us and then find out that a week afterwards we're acquired by somebody they haven't thought of. So they actually looked a bit at Ladbrokes and they basically gave us the feedback that that's not a big issue.
Cool.
In terms of LTV, first of all, we first acquired these customers around August last year. So some of these customers have been around with us now for more than half a year. So we know their cash flow rather than just their projected activity. So, you know, I would have been a lot more careful in saying this half a year ago when they were with us for just a few months. But now many of these customers are with us for, you know, very soon it's going to be three quarters. And we feel pretty confident that we can say that right now. That's the first thing. The second thing, I think that the major strength of 888 is that we have in-house a bunch of statisticians and mathematical experts that actually can do regression analysis and from the way players behave predict pretty accurately what's going to be the future. So while, of course, you know, if your site fails and they're not going to be able to access it, they're going to eventually go away, then from the number of times the player plays a week, from the amount of money they play each time, from their behavior when they lose money, when they win money, from their recommendation to their peers, and from a variety of other things, we can actually learn quite a bit about who these customers are. And right now, not only is it that the initial indication based on these customers that we acquired already 9-10 months ago is good, but also the actual analysis of these customers and their behavior indicates that they're much more loyal customers than what we've had before.
And can you tell, are these customers who've played poker before, or are they new to poker online, that is?
No, many of them are customers that have played poker before, but not necessarily as aggressively and professionally as some of the other players.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our final question today, which comes from Geetanjali Sharma from Espirito Santo. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. A few questions on the revenues, if I can. On the B2B side, how much of the revenue is driven by Cashcade? And secondly, on the UK revenue, which product segments are driving the revenue growth out here?
And also, sorry, which what?
Which product segments are driving the revenue growth in the UK? And thirdly, rest of the world, which countries dominate here? And then I have a question on the poker platform also, in terms of how scalable is this network. If you could give us a flavor on how many free money or casual players are currently active at peak time for the network, and how much after the investment that you put in, can this network potentially hold? Is it twice, thrice, four times?
Okay, so again, let's start with the other one. In terms of scalability, we never had a scalability issue before, and scalability is not what we focus on mainly in Poker 6. So I do not think scalability changed dramatically between the two platforms. It's basically, it was scalable. We were very far from the max number of players before, and we're still very far from that right now. We have a very good architecture, and I think that if we, you know, if we continue growing and let's say we double our liquidity, we still don't need to change anything in the scalability. That's on the Poker 6 scalability. In terms of B2B, Cascade revenue, again, we don't give out the breakthrough of specific customers, but as we've said before, Cascade is way below 50% of our B2B revenues, despite being the biggest customer. And so it actually, in terms of percentage of the business, if you look at it on a like-for-like basis, it actually went down a little bit. That's in terms of Cascade. In terms of the UK, the product segments, we've seen good performance on all of them, but clearly the one that pushed this up mostly is Bingo, because of the Wink transaction that basically added the Bingo revenues of Wink into our business. But we are seeing today growth all across. If you look at 2010 per se, then poker was a poor performer in the UK in 2010. Clearly, it was poor across the world, but also across the UK. And in terms of other countries, again, we don't necessarily have any one country that dominates anything. As I said before, we have the biggest country we have other than the UK is 6%, and all the rest are 1%, 1.5%, etc. So there's not a single country that I can point at as being a huge percentage of the revenues.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Okay. Everybody, thank you very much for the questions. Thank you very much for listening into this relatively very long call. I'll stress again, we've had a tough half one, 2010. We've turned the business around in half two. We're entering 2011 with very strong current trading across the business and with a few positive things happening, like the launch of Casino in Italy, like more regulation happening, the positive regulation across Europe, like more B2B contracts, and like poker continuing to grow. We have a few more surprises up our sleeve that we hope you'll see later on this year, and we hope we'll continue growing our revenues and our business. And we very much feel that despite the hiccup of 2010, the business is back on track and we'll continue to see it growing and margins expanding in the future. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.